I have been promising you to preach through the book of Deuteronomy, I know, on two different occasions. And you can see I am not going in the book of Deuteronomy. I was talking with Tony earlier in the week and confessed to him that every time I gather my materials and begin praying and moving toward the book of Deuteronomy, it's like yelling off into a deep canyon. It just ain't there. And so I backed off from that and began praying and looking and pondering and searching, and it came to me to look at the book of Ruth. And I must tell you, the book of Ruth, only four chapters, but has some of the greatest teaching from an Old Testament perspective. I've already got 15 or so sermons out of four chapters. The pretypes, the foreshadowing, do you think that you could go to the book of Ruth to learn how to be a good church member? Me either, but we will. So join me in the book of Ruth. It is a fantastic study. You ladies have probably done it many, many times. I've spoken briefly only one occasion prior, but I am looking forward to this greatly. The book of Ruth, it is the story of a Gentile who believed in the great Jehovah, which in Old Testament days was not unheard of, but it was a rarity. Ruth is the story of a Moabite, a young lady from Moab, a people who were the enemy of the nation of Israel. Ruth married into the family of God, which also was not unheard of, but was not encouraged and was actually spoken against, as we will see. However, the book of Ruth is a beautiful story that some of you, as I said, all know all too well. It is a story of love. It is a story of romance. I will even venture to say some, please excuse me the way I say this, but there's no other, erotic behavior, which I will point out. And it is a story, above all things, of commitment. It is also a story, a dark story. A story taking place during a dark time. Disobedience reigned during the time in the nation of Israel. And it was disobedience, very blatant disobedience to God's covenant, that the story of Ruth takes place. Also in the story of Ruth, you will see the consequences of the disobedience to God's covenant. Very stark and drastic, disobedience and consequence. But underneath all of this, maybe not underneath, but overarching all of this, is the wonderful story of a providential God who provided for his people, and he provided exactly what they needed when they needed it. And that was a redeemer. A redeemer that we will look at in the short term, but also the looking at a redeemer in the long, eternal nature of that office. It is in total a story of God's grace toward his people during a very, very, very dark time, which is a lesson that I could stop right there and say it is a lesson for us. As I mentioned in the children's prayers, we look out across our horizon. We look out across our world. And there's wars and we could ask, where is God in all of this? The church is fractured. The people of God are not obedient. The world around us is in sin. Our government is leading us in sin, encouraging us to vote for sin. Where is God? But please understand that the providence of God is at work. And He will never, as Jesus said, never, never forsake His church. But to understand the extent of God's grace towards His people, to understand the darkness of Ruth's time, to understand this jewel in the midst of this darkness, then we need to go back to the Judges. So please turn with me back to the book of Judges, which is just one book to your left. I want you to get a grasp of the culture, of the environment, of the teaching and the actions of the people around Ruth. And this is where she finds herself. And this is what God is dealing with. And it was the time of the judges. Judges takes place after Joshua. Joshua replaced Moses and has led the Israelites into Canaan, the promised land. But, as we will soon see, after Joshua's passing, a leader in the line of Moses, a leader in the line of Joshua, was not named. And the nation of Israel fell into great, great, great disarray. Sin, disobedience, war, strife became just the way of life. And there was one repeated action, time and time again, one repeated action on the part of the people that led to their condition, of which we're going to see here, and it was this: their disobedience to the covenant commands of God. It is that simple. God said, "Do this, and I will do this." The nation of Israel did not do that, and God did let them face up to their sin. Join me in chapter 1 of Judges. I will read portions of chapter 1 and then chapter 2 of Judges. After the death of Joshua, the Israelites asked the Lord, "Who will be the first to go up and fight for us against the Canaanites?" The Lord answered, "Judah is to go. I have given the land into their hands." Then the men of Judah said to the Simeonites, their brothers, "Come with us, come up with us into the territory allotted to us to fight against the Canaanites. We in turn will go with you into yours." So the Simeonites went with them. Now move over to verse 17. Then the men of Judah went with the Simeonites, their brothers, and attacked the Canaanites living in Zephath. And they totally destroyed the city. Therefore it was called Hormah. The men of Judah also took Gaza, Ashkelon, and Ekron, each city with its territory. The Lord was with the men of Judah. They took possession of the hill country, but they were unable to drive the people from the plains because they had iron chariots. Uh-oh. There's the first one. This inability or desire, we will see that it becomes more a desire to not drive out the enemy, is the problem. Go with me to verse 27. Manasseh, another tribe, Manasseh did not drive out the people of Beth-shan or Tanakh or Dor or Iblim or Megiddo and their surrounding settlements, for the Canaanites were determined to live in the land. Verse 29, nor did Ephraim drive out the Canaanites living in Gezer. Verse 30, neither did Zebulun drive out the Canaanites living in Kitron or Nahalol. Verse 31, nor did Asher drive out those living in Acher, Sidon, or Ahlab, or Achzib, or Helba, Achfek, or Rehob. Verse 33, neither did Naphtali drive out those living in Beth Shemesh. Verse 34, the Amorites confined the Danites. Notice how it's turned. It's not the Danites chasing out the Amorites, but now the Amorites are confining the people of God. The Amorites confined the Danites to the hill country, not allowing them to come down into the plain. Now go with me to chapter 2. The angel of the Lord went up from Gilgal to Bochim and said, I brought you up out of Egypt and led you into the land that I swore to give to your forefathers. I said, I will never break my covenant with you, and you shall not make a covenant with the people of this land, but you shall break down their altars. Yet you have disobeyed me. Why have you done this? Now, therefore, I tell you that I will not drive them out before you. They will be thorns in your sides, and their gods will be a snare to you. When the angel of the Lord had spoken these things to all the Israelites, the people wept aloud, and they all called that place Bochim. They offered sacrifices to the Lord. After Joshua had dismissed the Israelites, they went to take possession of the land, each to his own inheritance. The people served the Lord throughout the lifetime of Joshua and of the elders who outlived him and who had seen all the great things the Lord had done for Israel. Joshua, son of Nun, the servant of the Lord, died at the age of 110, and they buried him in the land of his inheritance at Timnath-Heres in the hill country of Ephraim north of Mount Gaash. After that, whole generation had been gathered to their fathers. Another generation grew up who knew neither the Lord nor what he had done for Israel. Then the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord and served the Baals. They forsook the Lord, the God of their fathers, who had brought them out of Egypt. They followed and worshipped various gods of the peoples around them. They provoked the Lord to anger because they forsook him and served the Baals and the Ashtoreths. In his anger against the Lord, against Israel, the Lord handed them over to raiders who plundered them. He sold them to their enemies all around, whom they were no longer able to resist. Whenever Israel went out to fight, the hand of the Lord was against them to defeat them. Just as he has sworn to them, they were in great distress. Then the Lord raised up judges who saved them out of the hands of their raiders, of these raiders. Yet they would not listen to their judges, but prostituted themselves to other gods and worshipped them. Unlike their fathers, they quickly turned away from the way in which their fathers had walked, the way of obedience to the Lord's commands. Whenever the Lord raised up a judge for them, he was with the judge and saved them out of the hands of the enemies as long as the judge lived, for the Lord had compassion on them as they groaned under those who oppressed and afflicted them. But when the judges died, the people returned to the ways even more corrupt than those of their fathers, following other gods and serving and worshiping them. They refused to give up their evil practices and stubborn ways. Therefore, the Lord was very angry with Israel and said, because this nation has violated the covenant that I laid down for their forefathers and has not listened to me, I will no longer drive out before them any of the nations Joshua left when he died. I will use them to test Israel and see whether they will keep the way of the Lord and walk in it as their forefathers did. The Lord had allowed those nations to remain. He did not drive them out at once by giving them into the hands of Joshua. I pray the Lord's blessing on the reading of the word. Notice verse 20. Through 22 of that which I just read. Therefore the Lord was very angry with Israel because the nations had violated the covenant that I laid down for their forefathers. All of chapter 1 outlined this constant repetition of the children of Israel, each tribe not doing as God had commanded them to do, to tear down their altars, to drive out the people. Yes, it sounds harsh, to kill the women and children, animals alike. But that was the command. Because God knew that if you leave the smallest inkling of influence, the smallest inkling of temptation You cannot stand. So be away with it. But they did not. They did not. Verse 22. I will use them to test Israel and see whether they will keep the way of the Lord and walk in it as their forefathers did. Now, for some, this is very striking that God would allow the enemy to come in and willfully, approvingly allow them to try and to challenge the people of God, to tempt them into prostitution, to tempt them into Baal worshiping, to tempt them into the religious things that are about these people, knowing they would fail. What kind of God is that? It's a God who demands obedience. It's a God who demands justice. And it's a God who allows you to have your will just to see. What was the reason for this testing? Disobedience. The Israelites did not keep God's commands to drive out the people. But here's the key, and this is what speaks to us today so much. The Israelites put their pragmatic, their practical, everyday need before the commands of Almighty God. They thought it would just, well, it'll work out. Let's just try to get along. It'll be easier if we just get along with the people around us. Don't be so hard to get along with. The practical, pragmatic way won out. And we will see that in the book of Ruth here just in a moment. The practical way won out rather than following the commands of God. And as I said, this speaks to us today. This is something we do. This is something we are so, so very guilty of. Instead of following God's commands, we think we know better and then act out of our own wisdom. And this is disobedience just like that of the time of the judges. I heard a conversation this week, and it rang in my ears even after I walked away. It still echoed. Talking about the upcoming election. And the men were talking about the financial needs of this country, and it would be better to do one over the other because financially it would be better. But to do the other would mean disobeying God's command. But that's okay because financially it would be better for our country. Folks, I'd rather see our country go in financial ruin than to break the commands of God. But these individuals have no whim or care about that at all. Their checkbook would be healthier voting that way, or at least they thought. We are so guilty. We are so guilty of exactly what was going on at the time of the judges. The time of the judges is a dark, dark, dark time in the nation of Israel. Evil. Evil. But yet this is the backdrop. This is the backdrop for the story of Ruth. One more note before we get to Ruth. And this is by way of application that I want you to keep in mind the entire length of time we're in the book of Ruth. Many look to the story of the judges and then also this thing as we move over into the book of Ruth. And when they begin relating that time of the judges to today, they will say, yes, we see the same thing today. There are nations around the world that have turned their backs on God. And we see this warring and this disobedience out of all those nations out there that just do not know God. That's the way many apply the book of Judges to today. Well, folks, that would be a complete inaccurate and unacceptable application of the teaching in the book of Judges to today. Because you see the book of Judges, it's not about the worldly nations. The book of Judges is about God's people. So when we start moving to today and applying it to today, we better be looking at the church. We better be looking at the church. The book of Judges is about disobedience. Disobedience from God's people. It is about the people of God failing to keep the covenant of God and therefore the consequences of that sin being wrought in their life. The story of Judges is about disobedience by the people of God, not the nations of the world. Why would you not expect the nations of the world that had never heard of God to act any other way? The book of Judges is about the forefathers of our church. Yes, it wasn't called a church back then, but the gathered people of God are referred to as the church. These are the gathered people of God in this time. These are our people. This is my forefathers, not following God's commands. I am guilty of the generations that may not know of the things of God because the previous generation didn't teach. Folks, this book is about us. It is to the church that the angel of the Lord said in chapter 2, I brought you up out of Egypt and led you into the land I swore to give to your forefathers. I said, I will never break my covenant with you, and you shall not make a covenant with the people of this land, but you shall break down their altars. Yet, you have disobeyed me. Folks, those words are to the church today. We have churches that will not name Jesus Christ as the only way to salvation. Instead of breaking down that altar that builds that up, instead of going against that, they build it up. We in our own denomination are guilty. Are guilty of wavering on the inerrancy and infallibility of God's Word. It must be asked, are we following the way of the judges or the time of the people? Have we sinned and fallen away from the covenant of God? Do we think we know better and pragmatically, practically, we follow our own wisdom? Everybody just say yes. Because we have. As I said, the book of Ruth, we find disobedience and the consequence of that disobedience. Are we living in the times that God is testing us to see whether or not we, the church, the people of God, will keep the ways of God in our church, in our families, in our neighborhoods, in our schools? Will we? Are we? The book of Judges, the times of the judges. This is the backdrop to the book of Ruth. One author refers to the book of Ruth as a summer's morning after a night of wild tempest. Because it's hard to believe that we would find someone like Ruth in such a time as this. Turn with me to the book of Ruth. I'm not going to read any of it now. I would ask that you read the book before we come back next Sunday, but let me introduce you to the characters because their names are important. First of all, there is Elimelech. Elimelech is the husband of Naomi. His name means God is King. Except his actions reveal anything but. Famine had stricken the land of Bethlehem, and it led Elimelech to take his family from Bethlehem into the land of Moab. Not a good thing. There he stepped outside the covenant. There he stepped outside the commands of God. Two other characters, the sons of Elimelech, Mahlon and Chilion. Not much about them. I'll get to them later. Then we have Naomi. Now, we are familiar with Naomi. She is the wife of Elimelech. Her name means gracious or pleasant.
Please remember that. She was a woman who knew the God of Israel, but at times her faith and her instructions of others did not represent her faith well. Then, of course, there's Ruth. Ruth has the namesake of the book. She is the daughter-in-law of Naomi. She was not an Israelite. She was a Moabite. She came to know and to worship the God of Israel, which led her to make a commitment to God and to Naomi that rivals no other. Naomi's words of commitment are legendary. You will not see such commitment anywhere else as what you will see and what we will find out of Ruth. There was another daughter-in-law. Her name was Orpah. We'll learn more about Orpah later. Then there is Boaz. Boaz was a wealthy landowner in Bethlehem. He was a relative of Elimelech. We're not sure of the connection, but he was a relative of Elimelech, which is incredibly important. He met Ruth, and he and Ruth became man and wife. But a lot happened between the meeting of Ruth and Boaz and between their marrying, and we will get into all of that. Now, the reason I go in such detail, or in to lay these people out, because each of these individuals and their names and their actions and their place in the story, there is great foreshadow and there is great teaching in each one of them and great application to us here today in the church. Now, there are those who want to make Ruth and her famous words of commitment central and the main focus. Look with me to her commitment. Verse 16 of chapter 1 of Ruth. Naomi was trying to get Ruth to go home. Ruth said, "Don't urge me to leave you and to turn back from you. Where you will go, I will go, and where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if anything but death separates you and me." See, this great commitment on the part of Ruth, when we get into what is behind that, is a great testimony to her faith and to her level of love and commitment to Naomi, but more so to the God of Israel. But folks, that is not the central theme of this book. That is not the primary teaching of this book. While it is important, yes, the fame of the central character, the central theme of the book, that belongs to Boaz. Boaz is to be seen as the central character. And it is his life and his actions that we come to know represent the main focus. The main focus of the book is the love and the grace and the redemption of God for his people. In the midst of evil found in the people of the time of Judges, God and his ordained will comes to the forefront. The book of Ruth reveals the grace of God and the redemptive plan of God in the midst of evil. And see, that's what we have to remember today. As I mentioned with the children, our children are being raised in a horrible, horrible morality, lack of morality stricken world on many, many fronts. And we could sit here and wring our hands. I do. When I look at what Luke and Justin are going to grow up in, I could go, "Lord, really? Really?" But yet, God preordained their birth, their time on this earth. He has their days numbered. I believe them to be covenant children. So I believe with all of my heart that they will be fine. They may grow up in terrible times, but they belong to God, not me. In this time of the judges, in the story of Ruth, we see this beautiful jewel of God's grace and his redemption for a people he loves coming to the forefront. And in the character of Boaz, that is what we see. That is what we see.
The book of Ruth is about redemption, about love, and about grace. Folks, as I said, I had no clue. I've read Ruth a lot of times. I had no clue of the nuggets, the jewels that are in this wonderful book. I encourage you to read it. 4 chapters. You can do that before your coffee. But read the book and look for Jesus Christ. He's all over the place.